the percentage of the U.S. population over 65 years old is projected to rise to 1 in 5 by the year 2030, and age is the greatest risk factor for dementia. The number of cases of dementia is expected to rise to about 8.4 million people by 2030. Experts say the biggest part of treatment is everyday support. In other words, caregivers. The majority of caregiving comes from family members, and women are often the ones who take up the task of caring for ill or elderly relatives.
We want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Is this you? Are you a part-time or full-time caregiver for a relative? What's it like for you? How has it affected your career and your family? And is it falling more on women than on men in your family? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Nick Bott joins us now. He's a neuropsychologist and postdoctoral design fellow at Stanford School of Medicine's Clinical Excellence Research Center, where he studies the true cost of healthcare in the U.S. and how to create higher value care. He's the co-author of a recent medical journal article on caregiving. Nick, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Nick, I want to quote a line from your recent article, and it says, "The best long-term care insurance in our country is a conscientious daughter." I mean, it's kind of a funny line on the one hand, but this is a real problem that's affecting huge numbers of women and has the potential to affect many more. So why are women at the front line of dementia care?
Well, there's been a lot of explanations that have been put forward, but by and large, there's just a remaining cultural expectation within our country that caregiving is something that falls more on women by default. And unfortunately, as we look at the changing demographics in our country, that has significant implications for women, particularly women in the workplace.
Could you tell us about that aspect of it, the demographic? Where are we now and where are we likely to be headed when it comes to women taking care of elderly family?
Yeah, well, if we look back to, 60 or 70 years ago, back in 1955, women made up less than a third of the workforce in the U.S. And the most recent numbers show that women in the workforce are now approaching equity with men, so 47%, which is great improvement and great progress. We also know that currently, two-thirds of all caregivers are women in our country. So there's already a disproportionate number of women who are playing a caregiving role. And when you add into the mix the aging of our society, it's kind of that combination of factors that led us to start thinking about how this might have some inordinate effects on working women, particularly in light of the progress that's been made over the past 50 or 60 years.
Right. And as you said, I mean, people are living longer, which means they're more subject to things that may require them to have care. And I guess chief among these things is dementia. How is dementia different for caregivers?
Yeah, well, dementia is a challenging syndrome to work with because it requires, by default, more significant care from the start. And that's because neurodegenerative disorders, Alzheimer's disease as kind of maybe the most common form that people would be familiar with, requires a lot of everyday supervision or support for what we call activities of daily living. Because it's affecting not only your cognitive functioning, but because it's affecting your cognitive functioning, it almost always is affecting aspects of physical functioning. It just puts itself in a different category.
Nick Bott is with us now from the Stanford School of Medicine, and we're talking about why women are shouldering the biggest burden when it comes to caring for aging family with dementia and other long-term care issues. And Nick, let's talk about how this may affect these women themselves who are in this caregiving position. So you may have a woman who has a full-time job, and then on the side, she may be caring for a family member. What happens to that balance between family and career?
Right. So this is what's, I think, particularly unique when it comes to the initiation of a high-intensity caregiving role. And as we were just speaking, when it comes to dementia or other neurodegenerative diseases, you are likely to enter into a more high-intensity caregiving role, which is ultimately what leads women at a disproportionate number to either reduce their work hours or leave the workforce altogether. both of which results in loss of income as well as loss of productivity on the employer side. I'd hasten to add that there have been a number of studies that have looked at some of the health consequences of caregiving across the board, and unfortunately, many studies have found changes in psychological functioning, physical functioning, poor physical health, increases in loneliness and social isolation, stress and immune functioning. There's just a host of consequences as your caregiving role increases, and what we like to talk about in the literature is an increase in what we call caregiver burden.
And what does caregiver burden mean? Is it all of those things you just described?
Exactly. It's kind of this combination of factors that as the demands of caregiving increase, it takes a toll on the caregiver across the board in a number of areas.
And what about employers? Do we have any kind of information about how employers handle it when an employee, in this case, I guess usually a woman, says, I might have to duck out during my lunch hour to check in on someone who may need some extra help or take them to medical appointments? What kind of understanding is there?
Right. Well, one of the things that has become clear is that while there is growing acceptance of some of the demands of caregiving when it comes to a newborn or a parental role, there isn't a lot being talked about in the workplace when it comes to elder caregiving requirements. It just hasn't kind of reached that point where it's reached a level of comfort within the workplace. So you have that working against caregivers as well, where there's just not as much acceptance to really talk about it. It's not necessarily something that employees want to bring up. And I think because of that, it creates a bit of a vicious cycle where oftentimes these caregivers are ducking out of work, trying to find ways to leave at a lunch break or to leave early and then come back to work at a later time without a lot of visibility on the employer's part. And I think this is part of the challenge that we face, is there just isn't enough conversation being had between employers and their employees to really help employers understand the unique demands that the demographic of employees that they likely already have on their payroll are facing on a daily basis.
And I suppose if you're looking for something like a promotion, or maybe you want to get included on a special project and have that on your resume, some of that stuff might get a little farther out of reach.
Right. And we also know that, as older women are more likely to have senior positions and have greater responsibility and higher salaries, if they are absent due to caregiving responsibilities, they're going to have greater implications across the board.
And one question we haven't touched on yet is, why is it this way? Why aren't men stepping up and doing more of this caregiving? And including, and you write about this, sometimes the woman in the family is caring for her in-laws, not necessarily her parents, but her husband's parents. So what's going on there?
Well, yeah, and I think, I certainly want to, to clearly identify that we know that there are many men that are playing this role, and so it's not simply one-sided. But as I mentioned at the start, I think there are a number of cultural expectations that are still firmly entrenched in our country, and I think there may be some cases where there's very tactical decisions that need to be made based on particular households and on who needs to do what. But I think this is the sort of place where we really need to become more comfortable having these conversations, so that it's not necessarily a default or an unspoken decision that's made, but one that is made that is reflective of the changing role of women in the workplace. Now that it's now that there's greater parity, I think it really demands a conversation to be had. In the same way that we're seeing changes in the demographics for parental leave and for childcare, we're seeing a bump in men who are shouldering more of those responsibilities. And I think it would be welcome, to see a similar bump as those conversations are had for elder caregiving.
Nick, what are other countries doing who are facing a similar crunch where there's this heavy caregiving need that looks like it's only going to get worse? Have other countries found some solutions?
Yeah, so, you know, we aren't the only country that are facing some of these changing demographics. So, for example, if you look across the ocean to Japan, they have an aging society as well. And they have also struggled with a deficit of caregivers due to changing in the demographics regarding marriage rates and birth rates. What they do have working for them is, you know, a national health system that helps subsidize and pay for caregiving of this population, which is something that right now we just don't have in place in our country. I'd also add that Japan has been on the forefront of technological innovations to help care for an aging population. So they have been very hard at work in finding ways to leverage artificial intelligence and other forms of non-human support to aid with activities of daily living or even social support, because they are recognizing how much of their population is at risk for dementia as they age, and things that they can be doing even through technological advances that can help.
Nick Bott is with us right now from the Stanford School of Medicine, talking about why women seem to be shouldering the biggest burden when it comes to caring for aging family with dementia and other issues.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Who does the caregiving in your family? How has it affected them, or you for that matter? If you're a caregiver, what's your experience like? What could be changed to better support you? And do you see this in your family, the women more likely to provide the caregiving for aging senior members of the family? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up our discussion in just a little bit. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're picking up our conversation about family caregiving now with Nick Bott from the Stanford School of Medicine. In a recent journal article, he says the projected increase in people with dementia is a looming crisis for women.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Call in with your experiences as a caregiver. Do you think caregiving for ill or elderly relatives does fall disproportionately to women? The numbers seem to show that. How has it worked in your family? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take our first caller now. We've got Paul joining us in Menominee Falls. Paul, hi.
Hi. Thanks for the show. Great show.
Thank you.
You know, I don't have any statistics in front of me, and I don't want to be disingenuous to your guests at all because, you know, I don't have the numbers. I can say from my own personal experience, both of my parents died. My father died of dementia. My mother's of Alzheimer's in 05, 3 weeks apart from one another. Mm-hmm. And I oversaw their care for about 6 years previous, you know, home care, assisted living, independent care, and a variety of a couple of nursing homes, memory care, et cetera.
And Paul, I'm sorry for your loss. Could you tell us a little bit about how that affected your life?
It was terrible. I can laugh about it now, but, you know, I have six siblings. So I think, you know, it took an impact on me. At the time I was raising my daughter. But I wonder, in your research there would have more knowledge about this. I would wonder too, not just women, but what sibling or what child is close to the parent, both emotionally and just geographically, which one has been pitching and doing things. I think there's other factors. I don't want to take anything against women because I think he's probably right. But I think just overall, the care, I think across the board is it's just devastating on a family, on your support system, just trying to go to work and do your daily activities. And
right. Got it, Paul. Thank you for sharing that. You said it was devastating, really tough on him. Six siblings. So that is something interesting, Nick. I don't know if you looked at that at all. What if there should be at least a lot of resources in a big family like that? And yet it seems as though, and I've seen this too, it seems a lot of the time, the majority of the caregiving does end up falling on one, maybe one or two people.
Yeah, Paul brings up a great point, and I thank him for calling in. It's never easy, and to lose both parents and to play that role is significant, and oftentimes is not really given the respect and value that it deserves. So I really thank him for calling in. It is the case that, you know, oftentimes in these situations, as he mentioned, you know, family dynamics play a huge role. You know, oftentimes they become exacerbated in the context of a chronic illness. And then, as he mentioned as well, you have, frankly, just geographic distance playing a significant role. And in some cases, it becomes just the most proximate sibling or the most proximate child that ends up taking the lion's share of the work. So I take nothing away from Paul's experiences, and I'm sure others have had it as well. I think it's a very challenging experience, whoever ends up taking on the lion's share of the caretaking.
Paul, thanks a lot for calling and for sharing your story, too. Appreciate that. And we'll go next to Daniel, joining us in Toma. Daniel, hi.
Hello. In our unique situation, my mom has 13 brothers and sisters, and she took care of my grandma and grandpa in their last life. And she refused to put them in old folks' homes, so she worked in one at one time. And she has to sacrifice everything to take care of them. I mean, she had to plan it out. But I noticed back then, first time she did it, the state and the county was more supportive. Like once a week, they come get the grandparents to give her a break because it was very stressful.
Sure.
And then the second time she took care of my uncles, which is her brother, one had no legs. He lost both legs and lost one arm. And when he got hit by a car, they actually fired her from her job. Mm. She was also holding the job because they said it was too much work for her. For them to be supportive of it. And then the other brother died of leukemia, and she took care of both of them. Both of them certified handicapped.
Daniel, thank you so much. Daniel describing a very difficult situation for his mother, who cared for her parents and then some of the 13 siblings that she had. And he did mention, it was interesting there, Nick, that in the beginning there was maybe more respite care for Daniel's mom, but he didn't see that as much later on. What is the trend there for a little outside help of respite care, maybe supported by, you know, the state or the county?
Right. There are limited resources that are available, and one of the challenges is just the lack of visibility for a lot of individuals who are playing a caregiving role to have access to them, maybe a little bit longer down the road in their caregiving, you know, role or career, they end up taking advantage of that. But it's very hard to kind of find those resources and get them up and running, you know, pretty quickly. So that's been a challenge. There's also, you know, Family Medical Leave Act, which can provide some unpaid relief. But, you know, as we mentioned earlier, that's actually one of the challenges there is it's limited to immediate family. So, you know, in-laws, for example, are not eligible for programs like that. And I think giving a hard look at the demographics of caregivers, I think, should inform the expansion of those policies to better meet the needs of those who are actually doing the caregiving.
Well, thank you so much, Daniel. I appreciate that call. And we'll go next on to Lindsay calling from somewhere, sounds like in New York. Lindsay, hi.
Hi there. I'm actually calling you from somewhere on the highway between Milwaukee and Madison, but I wanted to call in. I'm so pleased and excited to hear this conversation. I run a company called Wellthy, Wellthy, and we were set up to help family caregivers and help really provide the missing management, support, navigation, and advocacy that families so desperately need. The background of the business is based on a personal story. I've been taking care of my own mom for 27 years. She got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when I was 9. And it was really, I mean, I'm so pleased to hear Nick talking about this, and his work is absolutely spot on. I spent my career working at large technology companies and small startups and companies with great benefits for their employees. And I never told a soul that I had this secret other life as my mom's caregiver. And I would go home during lunch breaks and at some point moved away from home and would fly back and forth on red-eye flights. And it was enormously stressful and lonely and difficult for me and for my family. And so that was really sort of the motivation to build a better experience for families like my own.
Lindsay, thanks for that. And is this something that is covered by insurance if someone wants to work with you, or how does that end of it work? Just briefly.
Yeah, so sure. So we, the business launched private pay and direct to consumer family first, as we say. We really wanted to focus most importantly on building the right experience for families. But the exciting thing for us is that we're now working with a whole bunch of employers. So in the beginning of the conversation, you all were talking about the impact that caregiving has on companies. And, you know, what's exciting to see is that especially tech companies have started to recognize this as a huge problem and as a missing piece.
And I'm going to jump in. We're running out of time there. And Nick, do you want to comment on companies getting involved, maybe being that link in between the caregiving, the employee, and the family?
Yeah, no, I think the caller for bringing that point up. One of the major motivations for us writing this was the bright spot we found in Deloitte LLC, which is a large international consulting firm, coming out and being kind of on the front lines of expanding their paid employer-based leave for elder caregiving. So employees at Deloitte can actually take 16 weeks of paid leave for elder care responsibilities. And we really see a role for employers to play because they have something to gain. And much the way that they can gain from having great parental leave policies to reduce absenteeism, to reduce presenteeism, to increase productivity.
And we have to leave it there. We're out of time. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Nick Bott, neuropsychologist and postdoctoral design fellow at the Stanford School of Medicine's Clinical Excellence Research Center, talking about caregiving and the challenges it poses for women.